Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. My name is Bill DeYoung. This is Arts Alive from the St. Pete Catalyst, and I'd like to introduce you to today's guest. Gloria Munoz was born here in St. Petersburg. She's a Colombian-American writer, literary translator, and advocate for multilingual literacy and writing. Munoz holds a BA from Sarah Lawrence College and an MFA from the University of South Florida. She's the author of Donzerly, and it's Donzerly, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I pronounced it right. It was awarded the 2021 Gold Medal Florida Book Award. She is also the author of Your Biome Has Found You. Oh, she teaches and volunteers with literary and environmental nonprofits here in St. Petersburg, is a founding member of the Florida Local Artist and Writer Network, and in 2022, she was appointed Poet Laureate of St. Petersburg.
I am happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to. You've just published a young adult novel called This Is the Year, and I'm so happy that I'm about halfway through it and totally immersed in it. And I wanted to talk with you about it. It came out January?
January.
Hey,
yeah, January
okay.
7th.
Okay. This is your first novel. In a general sense, Gloria, what's different and was this more difficult than a compendium of poetry? Saying, were you nervous? Oh my God, can I do this? Of course you could do it.
So this is actually the third novel I've written. It was my first published novel. And now that I've learned, the first book teaches you to write the book, kind of like your first poetry collection. I felt, you know, I was writing poetry for such a long time and I had ideas for books that were definitely shaping up into novels in my mind. And I had like the devil on my shoulder saying, no, you're a poet, stay in your lane. Like, don't expand your genres. And then I had the creative pencil angel on the other shoulder saying, like, but what if you try it?
You can do anything. That's a big theme in this book. So the two other ones, do they have elements of what went into This Is the Year or totally different?
They're totally different. And I'm finishing this one of them right now. Like, I'm reworking. One of them. It's actually book two of this deal. It's not connected to This Is a Year, but I think it took writing This Is a Year to see that book very clearly for what it is.
This Is a Year is a story of a teenage girl, sort of a goth high school senior in Western Florida, and it takes place in the future. What I thought was so great about it was that it's written in the first person. In other words, Julie is talking to us. I feel like I'm following her thoughts. And she's endured a tragedy in her life, the loss of her twin sister in a hit-and-run accident. And it's been a year and a half or so. And obviously, she's still reeling, as is her mother. And so she's dealing with all sorts of things. Where did the idea for this come from?
Well, it came from a time that feels similar to the time we're entering right now politically, in which our state and our country and our world was facing more and more climate catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And it came at a time in which we were preparing for storms and thinking about, well, what's going to happen? Like, what happens when we leave? What happens if we stay? And how do we carry the grief of existing in a changing and warming environment?
That is obviously a big element in this book, climate change and what's happened to the world. But it's also her world inside is kind of a mess. So it started with the idea that the earth is in trouble.
Yeah. And I was a very new parent at the time when I started writing this book. Mm-hmm. I started drafting in 2019. And I used to go to all these activities, library activities, mm-hmm. here and there, you know, music classes, all this stuff. And then I was writing in between. And this was like when I had time off, parental leave before going back to teaching. And during that time, the pandemic began and everything shut down. All these programs, canceled. So I was spending a lot of time outside, and there was a park I would go to with my 6-month-old at the time, or 5-month-old, and it's right on the water, mm-hmm. in Pasadena, and we would pick up, I'd pick up like lunch or coffee and then go sit there. I'd time it with nap. She would sleep usually on a blanket, and then I would bring out my laptop and I would write. And I was like, this is my time to write. It made me like a very efficient writer.
Babies cooperate with you when they're that small.
Honestly, when they're little. Know. But I would look across the water and I was looking at these like mega mansions. There's beautiful homes right there on the water. And I would watch the sea kind of lap up to them. And I just began to imagine like, well, okay, the world just shut down due to a pandemic and we were not ready in any way. Now, what happens when we're not prepared for climate and climate change? And I was thinking of these houses in the future. I was like, what will these houses be like in 25 years? What will these houses be like in 50 years? What will they be like in 100, 180 years, 200 years? And as I like focused on them, and it was like this just almost like a writing prompt I was giving myself, I began to see them as these broken up apartments with the leftovers of exquisiteness and of regalness and of wealth, but they were affordable housing. And that's when the grid flipped in my mind and I was able to begin building the world of this book. So it's like I had this container and I was like, ooh, there's a story here. Who are the characters? Like, what is
that's how it, coming from this? Okay, well, it should be said that Julie and her mother live in one of these places with the old chandelier still hanging from the roof. And, you know, and the world has changed a great, great deal. What hasn't changed is this immense stone of grief in the center of her chest. And she's still going to school. She's still dealing with her friends. And nobody knows how to deal with her because so it's in the context of this very, very changed world. And I don't know how much you want to go into what happens in the book. You're not going to spoil it for me if you just talk about what happens with Julie ultimately, because I've read it in other things online. They say that she joins this program.
Yeah, I'll get into it.
Go ahead.
So Julie is grieving the loss of her sister.
Yeah.
And she had a year that was a very messy year. She calls it when she had her total freak meltdown at school, TM. So we know that she's gone through it and she's estranged everyone she loves, friends, her mother, everyone, her teachers, and isolated herself. But she and her sister, Ophelia, she and Ophe had a kind of pact that their senior year was really going to be theirs, and it was going to be like their time to leave Florida, to make their big plans, to dream big together. And right on the cusp of her senior year, which is when the book begins, it's like first day of senior year of high school, Julie visits her sister's grave and decides she's going to honor that pact and honor their plans. And you know how it goes. Best made plans usually go awry very quickly. So as she's making this plan, she's like, I am leaving the state. Here we go. Bop, bop, bop. I'm going to like go under the radar here and just like fly through and get there. Just get to the finish line. And her plans are intersected with everything from a space program, very militaristic space program that comes to recruit at her school, which becomes kind of this shiny star for Julie because she has to think, oh, not only do I want to leave the state, I could leave the planet. Like, how do I avoid all of my problems and all of these people? Let me get fully out of here. So this becomes a sort of shiny star. As she's moving along that track, her life is intersected with friendships, new and old, with romance, with this tiny bird in a shoebox named Techno that she ends up helping mend and care for and get back to health.
You know, I love the inner monologue. I do, because it really feels like, well, I'm not her, but I can, I see the machinations. I see where it turns, and that makes sense for her. Was it literally 3 years to write it in patches, or did you finally just do a six-month sprint to the finish line kind of thing?
No, it took, I think, a year to write it, and then I sold it, and then it took a year of editing, as it does. And it was a book that I kept re-seeing. I do firmly believe that, like, as you're writing a book, almost like sewing a garment of clothing, you end up taking it apart. So like taking all the seams apart and rewriting it and rewriting it and rewriting it until it's actually like the coat that you want it to be. And that's where I was with this book. Like I knew I wanted it in epistolary and like letter form to kind of scrunch or accordion the closeness. I was like, her sister is gone, but how do you move to like a very close second person as you're talking with someone? I was like, oh, it's a letter. And so she's always has this like monologue in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And so I originally started the book as a novel in verse, fully novel in verse.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was fully immersed in this story and narrative and the setting and characters. And I was like, oh no, I was like, there's more to write here. So I started writing out like scene by scene, like the prose. But then I wrote it all in prose and I was like, wait a minute. Now it's missing this like poetry, which is a really important aspect for her, because as the book progresses, Julie finds her voice, discovers who she is, and she also encounters like herself, her physical and creative self, and has to like be embodied in a way that is new and no longer uncomfortable for her. So I think we do that through poems, right? Poems are like an embodiment of our emotion.
This Is the Year is out now, and I suppose it's on Amazon and at Tombolo and bookstores near you and all of that stuff. You can get it through your website, which is gloriamunoz.com.
Yes, please buy it from Tombolo. There's signed copies, and it's a wonderful local bookstore, which we love, 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 love. I would say TombolobookShop.org is great. Support your local indies because they need the support.
Why are you a writer?
That's a great question.
That's the big question,
baby.
The
daunting question. I have always written for as long as I can remember. It's been a way of making sense of the world. It's also been a way of kind of celebrating the world, like the awe and wonder and strangeness of it. When I was really, really young, this is like one of my like core memories. I loved markers when I was younger, and I had a Sharpie near my like nightstand. I had like a little short dresser that I slept next to.
Yeah.
And I was little, like maybe like 9 or 10. And I remember I would have these ideas sometimes, and like sometimes they would wake me up, and I would sit up with my Sharpie and like jot down the idea really quickly on the dresser, I think thinking that I was writing it on paper. And my parents were like, oh my goodness, you're just writing on your furniture. But instead of reprimanding me or like getting upset, they bought me a ton of notebooks. And they were like, here are these notebooks. They're going to be open at night. So when you get these ideas, jot them down. You know,
that's very supportive. That's cool.
Yeah, they're the most supportive. So it was really, really helpful to just always know like, okay, these ideas or questions that I have, like they can be examined and they can be looked at through writing, whether it's like a poem or a song or prose. And I used to write a lot of songs when I was younger. And it was that. It was just like ruminating on life.
Do you think in terms of a verse, as playwrights that, or songwriters, do you know, whenever you encounter somebody, something, a scenario, a vision, does your brain translate it? You know, how would this work in verse? And one of the things I love about your poetry is that it flows in unusual ways.
Thank you.
You know, and I think that's, you know, that's you. That's your personal stamp, if you will. But do you think that way? Do you think like a poet?
I'm going to say yes. Yes.
She does,
I'm
folks.
I'm going to own this. Because I think in images, I think via ideas. We might all think as poets, honestly, because we jump between the tactile and physical and figurative every day, like multiple times a day.
Right.
Right. So we are constantly metaphor building. I do feel like if I am really obsessed with something, I do tend to kind of like carry it in my mind and like really mull over it, which feels very much like building a poem, because that's what you do. You mm-hmm. kind of sit with an image, sit with an idea, sit with a word or a feeling, and you're like, what is this and how do I like move through?
Do you write every day?
I try to write most days. I'm not like super orthodox in that, like wake up at 5 just because life happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I do try to write as much as I can during the week, and I do you consider writing to be something that doesn't always require you to have your butt in a seat? I do think like you can write when you're walking, you can write when you're driving. I think I have some of my best ideas like when I'm doing like something passively or physical that allows my brain to kind of like meander. So I have the app on your phone where you record, the recording app, mm-hmm. or like sometimes on my Apple Watch when I remember to charge it. I have the app on there for recording, and I'll just like be driving or walking or like even being at the park, like if I'm pushing my kid on the swings. There's something about this repetitive motion where my brain finally like makes sense of an idea or a scene or something, and that helps to just have that moment. So, and I do feel like that's writing. Like I really do. I feel like sometimes even like dreaming can be writing. Like if you are able to dream lucidly, like I feel like you can build something out in your sleep and wake up and be like, ah, now that makes sense.
What's your teaching situation now? Are you teaching somewhere?
I'm not.
She's available.
I will always be teaching. I will always be teaching.
Yeah.
Is what I will say.
Yeah.
But I made the choice to leave academia now 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very good choice for me. I run a business called Moonlit Musica, which we do a bunch of stuff for like kids programming and podcasting, animation, things like that. But I've also been able to free up my time to write more and then to teach workshops. So I teach with the Highlights Foundation right now, mm-hmm. which is located in Pennsylvania. And that's been really wonderful because I get to teach like this workshop called The Whole Novel. And we basically mentor, like the instructors like mentor writers on like their entire books and get to really like dig in. And so like the best parts of teaching I'm trying to keep alive within myself because I absolutely love teaching and love like nerding out on craft and like all aspects of it. But yeah, and so the institution part is the part that I was ready to kind of step away from.
When she said nerding out on craft, I was smiling. You can't tell. You still do this translation work too, right? If somebody says, I need this translated into Spanish, because you are bilingual. And
Yes. I have very exciting translation stuff coming up, some of which I'm going to be annoying, some of which I can't talk about, and some of which is in connection with my publishing house and working with them, collaborating with them. I love translation, literary translation, and all kinds of translation is something that really speaks to my brain.
Is there a Spanish language version of This Is the Year?
There will be.
Hey!
There will be, hopefully, knock on wood, if everything goes as scheduled in 2026.
Brilliant. Tell me about Moonlit Musica, because that's something that you do with your husband, Mark Feynman of the Great La Lucha. Hey, Mark.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So I will say artists are often nervous about becoming parents or big life changes. And I was one of them. But there was something so inspiring to me about those early days and early weeks of being a parent. And one of the things that came out of there was Moonlit Musica. We were not sleeping regular hours.
Big surprise.
We were awake a lot. I was awake a lot because I had parental leave. Because I was teaching at a university,
mm-hmm.
Mark's job, he was working full time at a middle school at the time teaching music, and they did not allow him any kind of leave. It was very intense. Mm-hmm. So we were it was a rough time. Like time felt very melody and strange. Our kid did not know what was day, what was night. They were tiny. And so we would be awake at night because they were awake, and we would begin writing songs together and just thinking out like different premises for shows for kids and just like reconfiguring. And you have to know, like, I've been a songwriter since I was maybe 13, 14. I've been writing songs forever. I've been writing songs since I was like a preteen. One of my first paid jobs as a writer was writing for a boy band when I was myself at, I think, 14 or 15. That was like the first time I was ever given a check for writing. And that was a very random how that happened. That's another story. But
wow.
So I've always loved songwriting. It's been something that I come back to again. Yeah. It's like making sense of something. In this case, my exhaustion and like how to stay awake and like feed a kid and writing came in handy there. So we started writing these songs, and then we had a bunch of them. And I was like, Mark, I'm just going to like map out what this business would look like, because we had been talking about collaborating. We've done a lot of things with poetry and music forever, like since we were dating. But I was like, what would this look like if we actually did this and like wrote songs for people or like made things? So I mapped out, made a business plan, and then we started reaching out, like fully cold reaching out to people. And you have to know, again, this was the pandemic. So end of 2019, going into 2020. Mm-hmm. And that's when we started like figuring out like, oh, you just have to like find who is the head of music or who is the head of XYZ for this show. And, you know, if it's a reality television, we'll just say we have a bunch of trap music or a bunch of music that like fits the scene, right? Yeah. Or 8-bit music or whatever you need. And then for kids programming, we were like, okay, we can write super simple songs that I was like, we both are educators who both have like been teaching forever. So I was like, we know how to scaffold and like how to teach vocabulary. So I was like, let's do super simple songs that build vocabulary and go from there. So we just started like creating within these buckets or lanes and just making stuff and cold calling or cold emailing people.
And it's been successful.
Yeah. It became both of our full-time jobs. Like it, like truly, like it's, which is so bizarre because I never thought it would. I thought this would be like a side thing that we did.
So if somebody's interested, what's the website? Where do they go?
Moonlitmusica.com.
I'm going to close with a question I asked you, I guess it's been 2 years or a while, when they named you Poet Laureate of St. Petersburg. And the question is, what does a Poet Laureate do? What does that mean exactly? And at that point, you weren't entirely sure. But you probably said, if you didn't say it, you might have thought it. Ask me again in 2 years.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what, as Poet Laureate of St. Petersburg, which just has such a beautiful ring to it, what do you do?
The position is really what you make of it, is what I've decided. Mm-hmm. And as someone who stepped in and already was doing a lot of programming in our community, in terms of like programming poetry at Tumble of Books, working with nonprofits, mm-hmm. working with the youth farm, et cetera, I began to think of like, well, how can I expand this, or what can I do that's different, or, you know, further it so it's something that exists outside of institutions? As Poet Laureate, I think you kind of decide like what you want to prioritize. And for me, I really wanted to prioritize access and community. And I mean like rich, like being somebody who's very thick and wealthy in community, and making those spaces for people in different ways. So a lot of the programming, and I think this is something that I've grown into as I've been in the position, a lot of the programming that is now fully fledged, built out, includes the City of Writers Poetry Festival, which is a citywide poetry festival in April,
right,
for National Poetry Month. We have a program going on with the St. Pete Youth Farm, which is focused on writing and mental health, and it's called Healing Through Words. This program was started as part of their Wellness Mondays, so we slot into the first Monday of the month, and we have different writers. And I've been thinking a lot about, like, again, access. Like, I don't necessarily feel like I need to be the face of everything,
mm-hmm.
because I, like, love organizing programming. I want other writers to be slotted in. I want other writers to have that opportunity. So that's been something I've been experimenting with. Like, so with the Poetry Festival, you'll see maybe I do one or two of the events, but the rest are really to showcase like all of the other incredible talent that we have here. And then, you know, we're doing St. Pete Youth Farm. We work with Nomad. I think it's just called Nomad now, but it's a Nomad art bus.
Oh, sure.
With Carrie and Tiffany. And we work to connect with the Juvenile Detention Center of Pinellas County. So we do writing there as well. And it's like kind of like a book club writing sessions.
And there's nobody at the city saying, you know, you need to do these things, Gloria. No. In other words, you came up with all this because of your dedication to community
and to the art form.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I get to work with Celeste Davis, who I love. Mm-hmm. I feel like if Celeste Davis wasn't the arts and culture director for the city, I would I would feel very differently about the position.
She's great.
She's a great collaborator.
I like Celeste too. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. So she was very open. She was like, "Well, what do you see? What's manageable? You know, I mean, what's manageable? So subjective because I end up to always bite off way more than I can chew. But that's, I mean, so far it's been working, and I feel like collaboration, and also, again, not being like I need to be there for everything, be the face of everything. It's like, no, there's so many writers here. I want it to be like the city of writers, like something that feels like it's ours and not necessarily just one person's.
Thank you to Gloria Munoz, St. Petersburg's Poet Laureate, for being here today. We've been talking, if you missed this part, about her young adult novel. It is called This Is the Year, and you can get it from GloriaMunoz.com. And at Tomalo Books, of course, they have her poetry books there, too. Also, check out MoonlitMusica.com to find out all about what she and Mark are doing for children, for families. It's amazing stuff. Gloria, thank you so much. Gloria.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Bill. I appreciate it.
Here. And we'll see you down the road.
All right. See ya.